KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, lots of fishy news out of Sitka, where the Board of Fish has been meeting, and what's going on with Pequod in Cook Inlet.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Southeast trollers want to see an increase in their share of hatchery-produced chum salmon. In testimony before the Alaska Board of Fisheries last week, trollers asked for management revisions that would give them more time and opportunity to target the increasingly valuable species. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has more.
The logic of the trollers' request is not hard to follow. Seiners catch fish by the hundreds or thousands, gillnetters catch fish by the tens or hundreds, and trollers catch fish one at a time. And so they want more time. In the not-too-distant past, chum were hardly worth catching, and they wouldn't often be caught on king or coho gear. Sitka troller Matt Laurie told the Board of Fish that his fleet has figured out how to land chum.
While these methods and gear have improved catch rates, trolling is still a hook and line fishery, and as such, cannot compete with the net fisheries without extensive access in time and place.
Since trollers began targeting chum several years ago, they found it difficult to hit their allocation. In 2003, trollers sold chum for around 16 cents per pound. More recently, it's been as high as 90 cents per pound, an increase of over fivefold, though the price remains extremely variable. Proposal 227 asks the board to reauthorize the chum salmon troll management plan for northern Chatham Strait and to allow trollers to fish 7 days a week. That's up from four consecutive weekdays. Still, even though hatcheries like Sitka's Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association and Juneau's DIPAC are producing millions of chum, the commercial pie can only be divided into three pieces: troll, gillnet, and seine. Linda Danner, who chairs the Chum Trollers Association, voiced her support for Proposal 176, which would reallocate hatchery-produced chum in favor of trollers. But she understood it would come at a price.
To improve the number of fish caught by the gear group lowest in allocation requires some other gear group to give up fish.
Danner argued that the hatchery boards and the state's regional planning teams are dominated by the net fisheries and that trollers stand little chance of improving their lot without the board's support.
If the two privileged gear groups on these boards are unwilling to participate in fair and reasonable sharing, the gear group lowest in allocation will never be able to outvote them. That's the loophole. We call it two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner.
The Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, or NSARA, has added two new chum release sites in Southeast this year: Crawfish Inlet, about 35 miles south of Sitka, and Southeast Cove on Kuyu Island near Cake. Crawfish Inlet especially may be a good site for trollers who already are converging in Sitka Sound to fish for deep inlet chum. Nevertheless, mistrust is hard to overcome. Hatchery fishing schedules for the three different gear groups have been a source of tension, especially in the terminal areas, or honey holes, where returning fish are most concentrated. Sitka troller Dave Ritchie remains skeptical of NSARA's capacity to resolve the issue.
By contrast, trollers have appealed repeatedly and proactively to the NSARA board to correct this allocated problem. Due diligence in seeking our fair share of the honey hole allocated harvest has been met with a mixture of indifference, disgust, and hostility.
A final chum proposal doesn't really slice the pie at all. It would just allow trollers to keep their forks in it. Proposal 229 was submitted by Sitka troller Matt Donahoe.
229 is not asking for time in a terminal harvest area. It is not seeking to displace any existing fishery. No gear group conflicts would result.
Donahoe's proposal would allow trollers fishing in the home shore area to cross into northern Chatham Strait without picking up their gear. It would save time, Donahoe said, and give trollers more access to chum.
Yesterday, Mr. Chairman, when you asked Carl Peterson what could be done to help bring trollers up to their allocation, I was in the audience like some sort of kid who was, you know, had to go to the bathroom. Like, I know. Pass 229 and pass 227. Thank you.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
In shooting down a proposal to use unmanned aircraft as spotters, the Alaska Board of Fisheries has declared salmon fisheries a no-drone zone. First, the board deliberated Proposal 204 last week in Sitka, which would have banned the use of spotter planes during seine openings for salmon, but given the number of small aircraft in use in southeast Alaska, Department of Public Safety representatives thought enforcing a ban would be very difficult. They referred to the proposal as a solution looking for a problem. So the board turned down the proposed ban on spotter planes. Drones, however, were not so lucky. Proposal 205 would ban the use of unmanned aircraft in salmon fisheries. Board member Reed Morisky and Chairman Tom Culberson framed the board's anti-drone position.
I'm for keeping pilots employed and not using unmanned aircraft for fish spotting. So.
Thank you. And I tend to look very hard at existing patterns of areas and fisheries, and I really do like, whenever possible, to promote economic stability. So we've had aircraft in this vicinity for a long time, this region, and you know, there are folks who stake their livelihood, and they contribute to all the local economies flying their aircraft, and I feel like it's just an unnecessary move, and as Member Jeffrey said, it's not something I want over my head.
Strictly speaking, the Board of Fish lacks jurisdiction over aircraft use, but it can and did ban the use of drones as an aid to commercial salmon fishing. You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show on demand anytime at kmxt.org.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries last Friday took new action on a set of proposals to allow pots in the southeast black cod fishery. The fishery is now open only to longliners, with some exceptions. But the debate was a preview of a larger fight brewing later this spring over what kind of gear will be allowed across the entire Gulf of Alaska. KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz has more.
The board considered a handful of proposals to allow pots into parts of the southeast black cod fishery. Pots catch fish in a large cage up to 10 feet in diameter, instead of the longliner's hook-and-line setup. But the proposal was opposed by some longliners. Linda Benkin of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, or ALFA, says pots and longlines just don't mix.
Once a pot is on the grounds or a pot is lost on the grounds, if a longline becomes tangled with it, the longline will always lose.
Those kinds of gear conflicts are a big concern for ALFA, but Benkin says the proposal also pits small boats against larger ones.
Only larger boats would be able to switch to pots because the pots are big, they're heavy, requires a lot more room on deck than longline gear. So we saw it as a potential for preempting grounds, creating conflicts, and also potentially really driving the small boat fleet out of this fishery.
The proposals were dropped after the Department of Law told the board the issue was outside its jurisdiction, and the question is actually one for the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. But for Benkin and ALFA, the issue isn't really pots in Chatham or Clarence Straits, which would affect relatively few permit holders. The big issue is the full Gulf of Alaska. A similar proposal will come before the North Pacific Fishery Management Council at its April meeting. That would allow pots to fish for black cod, or sable fish, throughout the Gulf. Benkin had worried that a decision by the Board of Fish could set a precedent for that larger debate. And she worries that if pots come in, it will push longliners out.
The shelf slope in the eastern Gulf is pretty narrow. It's really steep. There's actually not a lot of room on the black cod grounds. If you get a bunch of pots strung out there, longliners are going to fish near them at their risk of losing their gear. And because a lot of our boats can't switch to pots, they're can be a sort of effectively precluded.
The major motivation for adding pots is to reduce the number of fish lost to whales. Longliners in the Western Gulf have to contend with killer whales taking fish off their lines. In the Eastern Gulf, including Southeast, the culprits are sperm whales. Fish in pots could be protected from that kind of predation. But Alpha has been working with local biologists on whale deterrence, and Benkin said, at least in the Eastern Gulf, she'll take whales over pots any day.
Feel like we have a bit of a handle on that, and that the whales are much less of a threat than to the fleet and to the communities that depend on that fleet than allowing pots.
The board did approve a proposal backed by Alpha and Sitka longliner Dick Curran to limit households to 50 black cod per year in the personal use fishery. That fishery previously had no limit. In Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholz.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The parallel Pacific cod season in Cook Inlet comes to a close this week as the state waters Pacific cod jig season opens. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
The Cook Inlet parallel Pacific cod season closed to vessels fishing jig gear at noon March 2nd. The state waters jig season for the species opens 24 hours later.
The parallel season closure coincides with the National Marine Fisheries closure of the Pacific cod jig gear sector in the federal central Gulf of Alaska area.
She says the 2015 state waters Pacific cod jig allocation is about 760,000 pounds. It will remain open until the allocation is achieved or until the parallel B season opens June 10th.
And this is a noteworthy event because in 2014, the parallel jig fishery never closed, and therefore our state waters jig fishery never opened. And so that part of the guideline harvest level was not taken.
She says the ramifications of the state waters jig season never opening were economic.
You know, we call it stranded. It was just, it couldn't be caught because it was, you know, we never switched over to our seasons. And that's also true of the pot fishermen. They never caught their GHL, so there was fish that was, you know, left over that just wasn't, you know, wasn't harvested. There was no money made from it.
The parallel fishery for pots closed Monday, February 16th, corresponding with the federal closure. State waters opened February 17th with a total guideline harvest level of 5.1 million pounds. Of that, 85% or 4.31 million pounds goes to pot gear and 15% goes to jig gear. Compared to last year, the pot GHL has increased by about 700,000 pounds.
And last season, the pot fishery opened on February 14th and the large vessel season closed on March 5th. But this year, it seems like things are going a little slower for the larger vessels. In addition to that, last year, the small vessel fleet did not achieve their GHL, and so they stayed open the whole season.
Rumble says gas prices may have played a role in fewer vessels participating in various fisheries last year. She says with prices at the pump now much lower, perhaps there will be more boats heading out into state waters in 2015. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Kodiak Area Native Association's Tobacco Prevention and Education Program. CANNA believes everyone has the right to breathe smoke-free air. More information is available at 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had lots of help from the hardworking news team at KCAW, Robert Woolsey and Rachel Waldholz in Sitka, and from KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver in Homer. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.